got Richard going first.
It's going to be Hufflepuff and then Louise as well, so.
Okay. So who's taking the?
I can.
You want me to join you over there, Bartek?
Yeah, or I think you can sit back then and I can change your presentation. We're moving on to the taxonomy content. Although this is more technical than usually my part is. So we're actually going to discuss some taxonomy architectural decisions rather than the actual accounting decisions. So this plays into the whole discussion we've had, or you have had here today, also including type dimensions and things like that. So we've talked to you a bit about things like extensible enumerations and type dimensions before. Just introducing the subject, basically, and without much details. And now with the FASB, when they issued the draft USGAAP taxonomy for 2017, they have implemented type dimensions and extensible enumerations into the taxonomy. Louis will discuss the details on the extent. So there are 4 type dimensions and 11 extensible enumerations, or something like that. If I'm correct.
Something like that.
Yeah. So it's not that there is a whole review of the whole taxonomy. That would be too much of an effort.
Yeah, it's a limited effort sort of thing.
Exactly. Point. But they are proposed, to be in for the taxonomy. This is the draft yet. So I'm not sure when the comment period ends, but.
Enough. 5 days.
Louis is also, I guess, keen on any feedback you might have on this. Also, part of that discussion at the end will be actual accounting content, which will be common practice. So Richard will present some additional ideas for common practice elements for financial institutions. And we'll start with a presentation of Louis.
Okay.
Louis has actually added one more topic to his presentation, which is the taxonomy disclosure templates. I'm afraid, due to the time, and we're already over time, that's not going to be discussed today. But it is a very interesting topic from our perspective as well. What we are thinking is putting that to one of the next calls, maybe the December call. I think it's our first idea. So we will come back to that. Keep that in mind.
With all the discussion of templates today, it's
yeah.
Timely.
So Louis,
all right.
Go ahead.
So I'm going to try and make this as quick as I possibly can, given the timing. There's really, there's 2 items here we specifically want to talk about today: the extensible list. What we're calling extensible lists, or technically extensible enumerations. We try to adopt language that our accounting folks will appreciate more so than the technical folks. So that's where the extensible list comes from. Didn't come up with a decent substitute for type dimensions. But those are the 2 items. And for those that are not familiar with the idea of extensible list or extensible enumeration, it's not dramatically different than the enumerated list function that currently exists in the taxonomy. It allows you to select from a list of values, but in this case, you can actually extend it. So the name kind of says it all. It has one very powerful characteristic, and that you're able to actually use existing elements as values from the taxonomy, and we'll talk about that a bit more. And then the type dimensions. Now, I'm going to tell you that if I was going to give you this presentation maybe as little as a week ago, what I would tell you about type dimensions and how we're using them would be very different than what I'm going to tell you now. It's been a moving target, and I'll expand on that as I go through this. But basically, we embrace the idea of type dimensions. We were looking at what the UK project did. We were really we really found that useful. It was this idea of being able to create these individual containers, to create these groups of related facts in a manner that should be easier to consume. And we still think that has merit, but the target's moved a little bit. The other thing it does is it uses a unique data type. Unlike an explicit dimension, the type dimension has a unique data type, be that a date or positive integer type or some other format. So going to the next slide. So what's behind all of this? So we started a group maybe almost 2 years ago now. It's been a while. Called it's a FASB Dimension Working Group. And the reason we created this group was born out of an unending excuse me, frustration as to when dimension use was appropriate, or what were the appropriate scenarios for using a dimension. And we started that, and we categorized all the dimensions we had in the taxonomy, which was 270-odd dimensions, and we broke them down by disaggregation, metadata, and a couple of other things, one for subsequent events, and so on. And when we got finished with this exercise, and I want to point out, the reason we were going through this exercise is users of the data were, you know, having trouble consuming hypercubes that had multiple dimensions. So, you know, it's you see a simple example where you've got one dimension, and it's like, well, that makes sense, that's easy. You know, you look at a segment disclosure, there's one dimension, easy to understand. But now you lay on six or seven dimensions, and when you're consuming millions of records, that's not so easy to understand. On top of which, company A, B, C, and D are not using the same dimensions. They're using a variety of things. And we were committed to finding a way to deal with that. Now, you know, there are different scenarios where you can use all those dimensions and it works just fine, but those are typically situations where you've got tight constraint and controls over the dimensions that are in play. So if you've got a taxonomy and you're saying, here's the hypercube, here's the dimensions you use, and everybody does it the same way, you're probably okay. That's not the way it works in the US project. You get a lot of variability. And so we were keen on fixing that problem. And so we went through a variety of scenarios where we looked at something that was a flatter structure, something that was more akin to the data point model. And we ended up in the middle with something we called a hybrid sort of thing. And all of that was directed at reducing ambiguity in the hypercube modeling and ultimately improving data quality, which is why we're going through all this effort. So it's important to note that we're continuing to use explicit dimensions for disaggregation, but what we want to do is move those things that are not really disaggregation off of dimensions. So a simple example of that would be a debt instrument schedule, where you have a variety of attributes of debt, and they are commonly being dimensionalized because we don't really know where else to put it. And so we wanted to get that off of the dimension, out of the hypercube, and get that on the line items. And we saw a couple of tools that could help with that. Type dimensions was an instrument that could help us flatten that out. But the other one was this idea of the extensible enumeration, because the extensible enumeration now allows us to have a single line item for a particular value, and a value that we can express much more explicitly than, say, a string. Because you could obviously solve that problem with a string, but a string is not well defined. It could be anything. And so the extensible enumeration allows us to do that. So those are the two things that we're really focusing on here. The extensible enumeration, which allows us to move these characteristics or properties off of the dimension or out of the hypercube and onto a line item, so essentially flattening out the structure. And the one thing we've heard from data aggregators is give us line items over dimensions, time and time again. And as much as I hate it, that's what we always hear, right?
Yep. Absolutely.
It's a very consistent message. And this does deliver on it with a bonus. So continuing to move on. So I just want to talk about these a little bit. some technical stuff here. We don't need to go in this in depth. You know, a type dimension, for those that are not familiar with this, you know, the explicit dimension uses members that are defined in the definition link base. A type dimension is actually identified within the instance document itself. And the data types that can be used with the type dimension are date, year, string, positive integer, and some others. And then the member values are specified in the instance document. Right, so with explicit dimensions, all of that has to be specified in extension taxonomy. So there's benefits outside of why we are doing this as to why you might have a type dimension. Some of it is if you don't have an extension taxonomy, but you need to provide the preparer a mechanism to include these values, you can do that using a type dimension without having to mess around with an extension taxonomy. So on the type dimensions, in the draft taxonomy, we proposed positive integer types. I think we had four or five that we had proposed in the draft taxonomy. One was for RevRec, two were for RevRec, one was for leases, and the fourth was for retirement plans, and I think that was it. We published implementation guides for all of those shortly after getting, let's say we published, we haven't actually published them yet. We friends and family sort of review, so we showed it to our taxonomy advisory group, BARTEC, Ascena, and a few others have had a chance to take a look at it. And then we do some outreach to get feedback from preparers and users. And we had some meetings with major players in the market. And the feedback we got was that the way we were using the type dimensions in these scenarios was not to their liking. And it came down to a couple of things. The two things that I heard were that a positive integer type was not something that anyone could read and understand easily. There's no label associated with it. And that was a common complaint. I don't know if it's a legitimate complaint, but it was a common complaint. Again, it's like an index on a database file. You shouldn't really care about what it says, but it was a common concern. The other concern was that in the cases we had used it, there was actually a primary key somewhere in the table of information, and the sense was that primary key should actually be an explicit dimension, or at a minimum, the caption for the type dimension. So instead of an explicit dimension, it might be a string. Those are a couple of the responses. Some of it also has to do with concern about software coding and so forth. So there was sufficient pushback from our constituency that at least at this point in time, positive integer type will not go out in the final taxonomy. We're going to go around with our dimension working group on Thursday of this week. We've got our TAG meeting, our taxonomy advisory group meeting, week or two after that. And we'll circle back, but I suspect they will simply confirm what we heard after getting the feedback from our constituency. having said that, we will still be going forward with a type dimension, and this is an example, the sole example for the moment where we're going to use it. And so this is a excuse me, this stuff always gets me so choked up. So this is an example, this is around RevRec, where the preparer has to communicate remaining performance obligation and talk about, you know, when they expect to recognize that revenue. And in this example, we've made it really simple, and we've just indicated the years when they might be taking this, when they might be recognizing this revenue. However, when we looked at this in more detail and we looked at more possibilities, there are six or seven different patterns. Not everybody uses a nice simple date. Some will use a period of time, and there's just a whole variety of different ways to report the date. So even this scenario didn't work. And we went back and forth on this one, and we said, well, you know, a type dimension would be perfect here. We got all this variability in date. Let's just make it a type dimension. Even if there's two or three different date line items that might be needed from a consumption point of view, that's going to be easier to deal with than having different dimensions. That didn't sit too well either. And so where we've ended up, and this is still very provisional because we have not discussed it with anyone outside of this group since it came up on Friday, is to replace this single type dimension with two typed dimensions, one type dimension being for start date, and the second type dimension being for duration item type. So what's the duration? So the preparer would be expected to identify the start date for the period of recognition and then the duration of that. And you can do that with two dimensions. Technically, it works. It's a bit of a hack, frankly. The right answer here is complex type dimensions, but no one wants to talk about complex type dimensions. And so this is a substitute. I understand it's being used in other scenarios, but anyway, that's the problem we have with type dimensions. Any questions on type dimensions before I move on to extensible enumerations? All right. So
I understand that extensible enumeration can be applied to plain XBRL, but not to inline XBRL. My understanding is correct?
That is not our understanding. I'm not sure why that would be a problem. Yeah, I mean, the
value in the inline would probably have to match the values in extensible enumeration. But that's a problem with extensible enumerations representing paper
right.
reports as it is. It's not just an inline problem.
I mean, I guess alternatively you could have a transform or something.
Yeah, an extensible enumeration is a restricted list, so the values would need to match. Whereas a type dimension is an unrestricted list of values. But I don't think it's an inline specific problem.
I see. So inline text is not a tag. If extensible enumeration is introduced?
No, it's that the extensible enumeration would be a fixed list of values, and if it matches, you tag it against the fixed list. If it doesn't, you create an extended value that would match the one in your inline. So it doesn't make any difference as far as I know.
Yeah, so inline text must match with the value in another place. Yeah. But inline text itself is not tagged by extensible enumeration.
Oh, I see what you mean. You're saying that the tag does not enclose the value in the document, the extensible enumeration tag.
Yeah, because the value is the reference to another element.
I mean, it would be the same issue with an enumerated. It would be the same issue with an enumerated list, wouldn't it?
The same issue.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a problem with inline, then submit it to.
It's no different than a Boolean item type.
No, I didn't think it was.
Where true or false in an instance document is handled the same way.
Is that hidden XBRL? Hidden.
So it can be done with hidden, or it can be done using other mechanisms.
It's not perfect, but it's not a new problem.
Yeah. And how does the element appear on the taxonomy update document? Is it still a text type?
Sorry, say that again?
So the value of enumerated extension is a reference to another element. But how does it appear on the taxonomy update document for IASB directors to review?
We don't use them at the moment, so.
Right. But how would it?
So,
but if
we're listening to their consideration for the US system. We haven't used them or considered using them yet. If we did decide to go that way. Yeah. No, well, as in we're listening to the other experiences.
Oh,
if we decide to go that way, then of course we'd have a discussion about how to do it in the document, but we haven't yet.
Oh, so this is not yet a proposal by the foundation?
Yeah. Oh, well, you will see in a couple of slides that we are. Let Louis finish first.
Yeah. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit here. Scroll down. Bart, go, want to keep going? Keep going. Hold it there. So this is just to try and answer your question with this one example. This is how it's included within the taxonomy. And so on the bottom part of the screen here, you can see an example of an enumerated list. So in the base taxonomy, that enumerated list needs to be included. And it's made up of items that already exist within the taxonomy. Now, it can be extended by the preparer, or it can use elements from other taxonomies, but this enumerated list needs to be provided in the taxonomy. And it looks very similar to what you would see in a dimensional construct. The only difference is you don't have that typical, hypercube dimension sort of structure over it. But this has to be, the other thing that's unique about this is it actually has to be referenced in the extension taxonomy for it to work, which requires a change by the SEC in their process, in their EGGR system. I'm going to also scoot ahead to go down two slides.
If you could just explain the last underscore, bullet points.
Right. So the
just for the members to understand
right.
why.
So and we hear this terminology interchanged quite a bit. Everybody refers to the link roles as ELRs. ELRs are actually just the link roles that are extended. And in this case, this would not be an extended link role. You'd actually be referencing the link role that exists in the base taxonomy. The same will apply with the templates that we're including as well. That's a change for the SEC's EDGAR system. They've never allowed that before, and that's going to allow us to do some pretty nifty things going forward.
So you can still extend it?
Yes, you can extend it.
But you have to refer to the...
In theory, you can create your own link roles, although we could also block that. But in theory, there's no, not link roles, the extensible list, extensible enumerations.
And by that, you also mean that the SEC is likely to forbid adding
that hasn't been discussed at length.
Oh, okay.
But from a technical perspective, you could create your own.
But you're not.
But we haven't really discussed whether that would be blocked or not.
Because I thought if you are saying based that the reference must be in the base taxonomy, you're going to limit the extensible enumerations to what is in
that. That hasn't really been discussed.
Okay.
Louis, I also have a little bit difficulty understanding. To me, the extensible enumerations work this way, that it is a data type that links basically to a set of domain members that are defined somewhere else in the taxonomy, and you can use them basically as option of drop-down lists that you can pick as the particular value. That's a simple, so to say, explanation, the way how they've been designed for the CDP project and used. So I think that if you define them in the base taxonomy, there shouldn't be any possibility for the user to amend this at the level of the extension unless they change the entire definition of the base item that uses the extended extensible enumerations. So I think that it should be naturally, so to say, by specification, prohibited for users to change the entire domain. They can extend the domain, so they can add new members
right.
if you permit them. They can change the labels of the members and so on. That's how the
right.
extensible enumerations were designed. But I don't think they can replace the fact that this particular, for instance, list of domain members was linked as the source for the list.
I wasn't suggesting that.
Okay.
The question I heard was, can they create their own entirely new extensible, new line item, new lists and so forth.
Okay, and theoretically, yes.
Right,
okay.
Right. Yeah, we would not expect them to replace the domain. Okay. So let's go to the benefit obligations example. Yeah, right there, perfect. So I just want to walk through one example, and then I'm going to bring this to an end because I know I'm running over here. So this is just to really illustrate one of the benefits of this, and one of the reasons, there's a couple of different reasons we went down this path. One was simply to be able to get those properties off of the dimensions and onto line items, but to be able to do it in a way where we're able to, you know, be more explicit about the values, because clearly we could just create line items that accepted strings, but that's very unprecise. What we like about this is that we're able to use existing elements as values. Now there's a benefit in that if a filer is a preparer is filing in different is preparing their disclosure in different ways, we can actually have different syntax with the same semantics. And that we think is really important. Now, having said that, users are still, data aggregators are still scratching their head as how they're going to deal with that. But it is, in theory at least, a big benefit. So on this next slide, I'm going to walk through this fairly slowly. So the first diagram is intended to illustrate a before scenario. So this is where all of the properties in the disaggregation are in this dimensions member pair sort of idea. And so we have a retirement plan funding status axis, a retirement plan status tax status axis, and then a retirement plan sponsor location axis. And all of this is using a single line item. The single line item is the 110, disaggregated 50 and 60. If we put the properties on line items using extensible enumeration, we now have the 50 being tagged using the retirement plan tax status extensible list, the 60 being tagged using the retirement plan sponsor location extensible list, and then the 110 is still tagged using the same primary line item. And what this communicates to me is that in both cases, if I took all this information and I crammed it into a fact table, I would see that I would have the same metadata, the same attributes on each fact value, just using a different construct. All right, so the 50 in the first scenario is being tagged with qualified plan member retirement plan tax status taxes. And in the second scenario, it's also being tagged with retirement plan tax status extensible list qualified plan member. Now we're going to say, well, what's the difference? Why one over the other? Again, keep in mind that when you put all these things on a dimension, you don't know what's disaggregating, you don't know what's a property, you're consuming millions and millions of records. It's very difficult for a user to figure that out. The fewer attributes we have on the, in the hypercube itself as a dimension, the easier it is on the consumption side. And it's important that those attributes be as much about disaggregation as possible. We still have some edge cases where we haven't gotten there. You know, range axis is a perfect example. But one of our goals here is to only use dimensions as close as possible for disaggregation and put everything else in line items. And that should make it easier for folks on the consumption side.
So in other words, instead of one line item and three dimensions, you would have three line items and one dimension.
And again, users tell us, give us line items. Maybe in a year they'll say, give us dimensions, please. I don't think so. So I'm going to stop there because I know I'm over. But that's the gist of it. Bartek.
Thank you. So I'm just going to skip the taxonomy disclosure template, as I told you before. So now what we have done, we've tried to look at type dimensions and extensible enumerations from the perspective of the IFRS taxonomy, obviously. This slide actually explains what extensible enumerations are in the first sentence, but Luis already did that. What we thought was one of the main uses that we could do it, and that was also one of the main uses that Luis's team has done for the extensible enumeration, is to eliminate those elements that say description of a line item where something is reported. So for now we use a string element. So there is a line item that says describe line item in the statement of financial position in which leases are included, or describe a line item in statement of profit or loss where some cost is included. And you are reporting a free text. So it can be, you can say property on equipment, you can say property, you can say whatever you wish, you can say XXX for that matter. And I will present you with an example soon. The other two uses for extensible enumerations that the FASB did, I just wanted to illustrate that they are not currently applicable to the IFRS taxonomy as it is now. It's not to say that they shouldn't be applied in those cases. It's just to say that we don't have those structures that the FASB used them for, or that we have slightly different modeling already in place. So for retirement plans, and I'm actually incorrect to say that the four axes were replaced, they were, I think, both at the axis and the extensible enumeration, which is a bit complex. So I don't want to go into that, but in general, the whole idea is we don't have those axes or the need for those extensible enumerations at the moment in our retirement benefit plans modeling. And in the second case, the FASB used it also for revenue, where we have completely different modeling, where our increase-decrease is a member, actually. So we are reusing the line items from the statement of financial position or from the income statement. And we have a member that said increase-decrease due to application of IFRS 15.
Late-breaking news.
Which is revenue.
We may actually be doing that.
Okay. So, I mean, the reason why we did that was we thought that because the number of elements is undefined, so the number of members would also be undefined, then it's easier to just have one member that defines that it is the increase-decrease, so the impact of IFRS 15, and then reuse whatever line items are used by the filer. So that means that you don't have any extensions on those line items because you're already using those line items in your primary financial statement. So we thought that might be, that's probably easier. A typical example of what we could use those extensible enumerations, as I said before, for those disclosure of a description of line item where something is reported. Currently, the top example is you report a line item, so the value of 1,000, and then you have a line item that you have to input text, for example, property, plant, equipment. And if we were using the enumeration, then the second line item would take the enumerated list values. So we could predefine the list of items that that you can choose as your line item where something is included. Obviously, this is extensible enumeration, so you could also extend that list with some other items should you need to. The advantage, like Luis said, is that element is already defined. So definitely what we would be getting is more consistency. People would not be able to just put a free text element that, you know, potentially spelling mistake, potentially something that just, you know, it's more difficult to analyze string. And instead, you would get a list of items that are already used in the taxonomy elsewhere. So the advantage also is that you can actually derive some meaning from that value. So if you use IFRS underscore property or column property plan equipment, then you can actually go to the element property plan equipment, identify, read what it is, see the references, you know, see all the properties of that element. For us, the disadvantages are, well, first of all, I'm not sure if I should call it disadvantage, because it's not a disadvantage of enumerated list per se. it's the disadvantage that it would be a new architectural solution for the IFRS taxonomy. So definitely, you know, we it's more difficult for us than the FASB, because the FASB has to work with the SEC, ask the SEC whether it's doable, what the SEC filing system takes or doesn't take, and then they can go ahead. For us, it's at least 20 countries that currently use the IFRS taxonomy in some sort of form. So we will definitely have to reach out to them and ask if that, you know, makes things easier for them, if they can do it, if their systems can take it. We know XBRL can take it. That's obvious, because it's in line with the specification. We just don't know how their systems are built. So it will take some time for us to get that and make that consultation. So we're not going to change it today or tomorrow.
Bartek, if I can just comment on that. I mean, our constituency is not the same, but we did, you know, over the last few weeks, we've been doing outreach. And, you know, this might be a Brussels sprouts versus string bean sort of scenario. But while we got pushback on type dimensions, we got no pushback on extensible enumerations. And, you know, we were talking to software and service providers, so.
Yeah, well, I should think that from the service providers and software perspective, it should not be a problem. What we are concerned a bit is the filing systems of different countries. So, you know, for the US, it's the SEC. If the SEC system can take it, then it's fine. Obviously, providing that software and software vendors and software itself can deal with it. We just have to make sure that we are not causing trouble, more trouble than benefits for those countries who have their own systems set up. And the second question is on the list of choices themselves. So this might be the tricky part on our side, discussing the list of available choices in the taxonomy. So for example, for leases, it's probably one of the easier cases when you can say, okay, probably property, plant, equipment, might be intangible assets if a company chooses to apply IFRS 16 to intangible assets, because there is a choice. It cannot be property, plant, equipment, because by definition, any leases that are in property, investment property, because any leases that are investment property have to be presented as investment property in accordance with IFRS 16. So, you know, the question is, what do we put on the list? What do we not put on the list? And how does what we put on the list restrict people from using different things? Does it push them towards, you know, is it an interpretation of the standard itself? In particular, in cases of profit or loss, because in profit or loss, usually we just say it should be included in profit and loss, and the line item should be disclosed. But the list of line items in profit and loss is practically unlimited. So anything we decide to put on the list might be seen as an interpretation. So that's the risk for us. I know Luis's team prepared some items, but you know, you did not want to go into the full list of items that are possible for those enumerations. You created some examples and assumed, for now at least, that the preparers can extend it.
Well, I mean, keep in mind that everything that we've included is included in one of our implementation guides. We're not going beyond that at this point.
Yeah. So for leases, I mean, that is the draft taxonomy for leases from the US perspective, used other assets, something else. For example, it did not use property, plant, equipment. It did not use intangible assets. So also for us, I have a concern that, you know, if I don't put intangible assets on there, people are just not are going to think, okay, I can do it for property, plant, equipment, I cannot do it for intangible assets, which is not exactly true, because you have a choice how to apply the standards for intangible assets. So that's another concern we have. And the last concern actually is not valid anymore, because it was valid when I was preparing the slides, but there was an update to the extensible enumerations specification, I think 2 weeks ago, which provided for double choice. So now you can choose more than one field of the list at the same time, which was our concern before, because theoretically you could say that, I don't know, depreciation is in line item A and line item B. which would be trouble for extensible enumeration. As I understand it, it's not trouble anymore. So, so
but
that
once the spec is hits recommended status.
Yeah. So that problem should go away.
Do you want to take
well,
my and
restrict you to only hidden items in the 9xBRL if you choose to.
Okay.
Say that again.
Although that if you selected two items, it would restrict you only to a hidden item in inline XBRL.
So it might be an issue for you.
Wouldn't be able to use a transform then. So.
Well, from what I hear, questions from Enomoto-san and your comment, Kyle, I think we have to rethink the inline XBRL.
It's the usual problem with inline XBRL, which is that if you've got something that specifies the value in a slightly different format to the way the preparer has decided to put that in their financial statements, inline requires either a transformation to exist in the transformation registry or for you to manage that in some other way. So, for example, the fact that the value would now have the namespace on it and be directly related to the member thing, people would be very unlikely to put IFRS-full:, property, plant, and equipment in their financial statements.
So, the two questions we had basically was, first of all, you know, is it worth us investigating and going on with the use of extensible enumerations for the description of line item in the statement of X? And the second question is, do you see any other places where extensible enumerations would be in particular, you know, good and applicable to the IFRS taxonomy? Michal?
Yeah, I just wanted to go back to your previous slide very quickly and say that strongly support
this one?
Yes. You know, even slow killing of the beast of line items and replacing it with whatever is the better solution. I think that we don't need to worry about the second disadvantage because, frankly speaking, it is actually completely the reverse. The filers, even if IFRS Foundation prescribes, let's say, a preliminary list of the choices for the particular enumerated list, the filer can always, in a very, very easy and controllable manner, can actually extend this list. That's how it was designed. Therefore, I would perceive it actually to the contrary, an enabler of this kind of governance of the values on the list, rather than.
For us, the concern is not about extensibility; it's more about what we put on that list and how.
Yeah, but from this perspective of interpreting the standard, I think I see it more like, you know, anything in the taxonomy could be perceived this way. So. Because this is an extensible mechanism which allows filers to very quickly arrange the values if they want to in a way they prefer, therefore I don't see there is any particular risk of interpreting the standard. I mean, you could equally argue that a subdomain list of the primary items on the balance sheet is an interpretation of the standard. So anyone could argue that. I think that in this case, the extensibility provides for removing this argument and saying that this may be the preliminary set of choices that the foundation is offering, but it doesn't in any way restrict or interpret or indicate that these are the only choices that should be considered. Actually, to the contrary, it's just the reference model given.
Is it that you think that would be safer just to put it, you know, one very or no? I think you need to put one, don't you?
You need to put one. So maybe a top element and just leave for the filers to decide what do they want to attach underneath.
What we are afraid is kind of the middle ground when it,
yes.
You know, we define five,
mm-hmm.
and at that point that becomes an interpretation because if you define, if you put them a long list, that suggests okay, it's a huge list.
I think from the perspective
of just one is that they don't really know what the domain of possible.
Well, actually, this is different because you can indicate the top domain member. So, you know, as long as you've got the top domain member in the hierarchy, you can always indicate that. And I think
I would suggest filers will still have issues interpreting what the domain is without sufficient number of examples.
I fully agree about the examples. The question is what to put into the taxonomy. So to say, then I would lean towards putting one domain member. Just suggesting that the top domain member to be put there, and filers can link underneath whatever they like.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, is if you don't put something under it, and you put several of them,
they will not know what to extend for.
No. We look at it and say, I don't understand, but let me assure you.
I don't know. I mean, personally, the thing I don't like about the US proposals like other assets, and then uh-huh. I know that my leases are not going to be, well, maybe they are going to be in other assets, but that's unlikely. It's more likely that they will be in property plan equipment. I don't see that on the list, And I'm asking myself, oh, should I put it in other assets? Because other assets are on the list and property, plant, equipment is not on the list. So I think there's an educational thing, and I'm just kind of afraid that it's a very new thing, extensible enumerations. And people are not yet used to them, and they will look at the list and think, okay, they have prescribed four elements. I better choose one of those four. You know, if we are kind of accustomed to extensible enumerations, if you have done those extensions a lot, then you're probably not going to look at it this way. At the first look, when you know, I open it and I look at the U.S. taxonomy, and I thought, okay, do I choose from other assets, prepayments, and something else that is on the list that I don't? You know.
But on the other hand, we've got the situation that the IFRS taxonomy primarily still needs to be in one way or another, even in minimum way, extended by the regulator. Therefore, you know, I think it's safe to say that the regulator will always be at the level of knowledge that would first prepare this set in the context of given, for instance, set of standards, or will explain to the filer. So probably what I'm trying to say is we may be worrying a little bit too much ahead of things happening, where this solution is flexible enough to provide for these different situations.
Okay, point taken. We would have to run each list by the board nowadays. So, you know, I'm looking at Steve.
No, I think, because we are running quite over time, may I suggest if any of your members still have some views and comments, if you send them by email to Bartek, that we can also review it with our board members, and then we come back and report back to you at the future meeting.
You know, even we are interested in even if you just go for it, or, you know, we think don't go for it at the moment. So. That would be the most useful comment, I think, because we need to do some real outreach with other regulators, and therefore, if you feel it's not worth it, maybe it's not. If you feel it's worth it, we probably should pursue this and go far forward with it. So your comments, you know, we don't have a voting system, but actually, you know, vote would be something that I would prefer. If you could just send us an email saying, you know, go for it, explore it further, or just say, you know, wait.
Go for it.
I know your vote, point taken. And the type dimensions, I will skip that. Luis has explained how the type dimensions might be used. This is one of the examples, just a very simple example for our taxonomy, for the IFRS taxonomy. So we have what we have currently in the taxonomy is a list of borrowings. You can, the axis is called actually borrowings by name. So in case you have a list of your borrowings, you name it B1, B2, B3, and B4. And then you can report some values for it. You can report the value, you can report the notional amount, interest rate, and so on. And this is done by explicit dimensions currently. It could be done by type members, and the type member would act like a container. So you would have the type member B1, and then you would be reporting the same four line items just for the type member that is B1. And the main difference obviously is that you don't need to extend, so your members, your B1, B2, and so forth members would appear only in the instance document, so the base taxonomy doesn't formally have to be extended. And also, we could, what Luis was also talking about, we could reduce the number of uses of explicit dimensions, so we could kind of dedicate explicit dimensions, for example, to disaggregations, and then use type dimensions for anything that is a container functionality. So by that I mean the functionality that only connects a certain number of line items. And again, the disadvantages that we haven't used before, the other disadvantage we see is that all members are siblings, so there are no hierarchies in the type dimensions. So you cannot build a member structure like you do with the explicit dimensions. And again, the questions we have are similar. Should we consider using type dimensions? Do you think it will help the IFRS taxonomy? And a second question that is probably not for today, maybe even as if we do use them, we plan to use them as a container functionality first, like the FASB has, and if there are any other cases that you see type dimensions used, just let us know. But the most important question for us is, and again, you can send us email with your answer, is should we go there? Should we do the outreach, or is it, I don't know, for now, should we just wait and see what happens, how things are done, for example, for the FASB? The FASB will get, if they go ahead, they will get some usage as soon as next year, I guess. The other option is to wait and see, and then react on based on the feedback that the FASB gets, and the usage that the FASB gets. So that's my question to you, and again, feel free to answer it in an email.
Yeah, and I think maybe in the interest of time, again, please send some comments by email to Bartek. We have an ITCG call scheduled for November and December, so we can bring that topic back at that time.
Okay? Yeah,
because we're running quite a lot behind now. So
yeah, we can come back to it in December. I think that's a good idea, and then we can hopefully gather your feedback in December on the issues. All right.
Richard, in 3 minutes.
I'll try my best. Okay. Earlier on in May this year, we received feedback from a user of the IFRS taxonomy. This user had selected some financial statements of 5 large banks in a particular jurisdiction, and they mapped this to the IFRS taxonomy. And the result of that is that we were presented with a list of disclosures for which appropriate IFRS taxonomy elements couldn't be identified. And some of these disclosures were considered as entity specific, and all the disclosures were reported by almost all 5 of the banks, and these disclosures we thought may qualify as additional common practice additions. Okay, and in reviewing these disclosures, we have compared them to the empirical review of financial institutions that we did in 2012, and we applied our selection criteria, which includes frequency and consistency, and that resulted in 21 new common practice elements being proposed and 2 elements being rejected despite meeting the frequency criterion. Now, this list we have discussed with our IFRS taxonomy review panel, and we have also included an accompanying spreadsheet with this list of elements, the proposed and rejected. And so we're asking the members of the ITCG to review this list and let us have any comments or feedback you may have by November 8th, which is 2 weeks from now. And we expect to publish the proposed taxonomy update in Q4 2016.
We would like that list to go into the 2017 taxonomy, therefore, you know, the deadline in 2 weeks' time. We have one more common practice update, taxonomy update coming in. We could merge the two and put it out there in November, December. Then it would be ready for the 2017 IFRS taxonomy.
You want explicit feedback, or we're silent? Does that mean we're okay with it?
I think preferable if you say, look, we don't see any problems, that would be great.
I think we always prefer explicit feedback.
Okay.
as a rule. Because that also shows, you know, to the external parties that this has been reviewed. If we don't get any comments, we have nothing to show for. And that way we can say that we've actually received acceptance from a certain number of ITCG members.
This is an area of the taxonomy where there are specific industry extensions in jurisdictions like India as well as the UK. I think it's well worth picking up those banking industry extensions and looking at things like naming convention and stuff, because they'll need to later re-underpin their taxonomies, taking into account these common practice extensions.
So you mean compare our list to the
to
the UK, for example?
UK and India and a number of other jurisdictions.
Thank you.
Okay.
No, I think we, I suggest we take now 10-minute break, so short time, and I think also probably for the closed session today, we'll bring that back at an other date as well, so that we catch him up a little bit on time, John.
It works for me. You were complete, right, Richard? Yeah. Okay. So let's take a 10-minute break till about 10:25.
We haven't got enough.